Hi, everyone. My name is Benno Papari, and this is the Songwriters on Process podcast. Since 2010, I've interviewed over 300 songwriters about, well, their songwriting process. I don't care about favorite cities, tour stories, favorite foods, or anything like that. My goal has always been to treat songwriters the same way that we treat poets and more traditional prose writers. They are writers, plain and simple. In these interviews, we go deep into the specifics of the writing process. This is no, hey, do you start with the lyrics of the music type of interview. Now, a little bit about me. I'm not a songwriter. In fact, I've never written a song in my life. I have a PhD in English language and literature, and I'm a former academic. So as a prose writer, I enjoy exploring how my process intersects with those of songwriters. This is an intelligent conversation about writing between two writers. And that, of course, means we talk a lot about books. The site features interviews across all genres, from metal to jazz, from country to that big category known as indie. You'll find a couple of A-list actors on the site and several members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as well. Now, I select songwriters to interview who fit into one of two categories. One, do I listen to them already? And two, if I don't, would they make for a compelling and intelligent interview? You can find these interviews across all podcast platforms, as well as at songwritersonpodcast.com. Do you have an idea for an interview or a comment about the site? Hit me up at ben@songwritersonprocess.com. Thanks for listening and enjoy. And today it's a party on the podcast. All four members of Future Islands join me today to talk about their creative process. We have Garrett Wellmers, William Cashin, Sam Herring, and Michael Lowry. Again, all four members of Future Islands. That's a first for me. Never had four people on the podcast at the same time. They have a great new album out called People Who Aren't There Anymore on 4AD Records. So we didn't go as deep into the process because, you know, 45 minutes with four people, you can only ask so many questions. But let me say this, stick around definitely till the end. This is the most literate band I have ever interviewed. We had like 5 minutes left in the podcast, and I wanted to make sure we talked about their reading habits. And all four of them just gave me a laundry list of books they are reading, they have read, who they like. You'll find something in here that you like as well. I forgot one of them said they were a big David Gran fan, and oh wow, so am I. I have not seen the movie Killers of the Flower Moon, but I've read the book and it's amazing. But you'll hear what I mean. Listen to the whole thing, but my gosh, at the end, the books they rattle off and how literate, that's a bad word. That's not the right term. It's how well read they are. So impressive. Kind of puts me to shame. But this is great listening to the banter, and I think they all hopefully discovered something about the others in the group hearing their process. But didn't go as deep. Again, I didn't get to ask all the questions, but that's fine. I'm such a huge fan of the band. Again, Garrett, William, Sam, and Michael, all four members of Future Islands today. Their new album, People Who Aren't There Anymore on 4AD Records. One programming note, I'll be posting an interview with Ducks Limited in the next week or two, so check that out. I've got some great interviews coming down the pipe. So with that, my interview with Future Islands. All right, let's get started. So Sam, we'll start with you since you're the first one on my screen here. I find that writers fall into two camps. They either feel like you've got to create in some fashion every day, no matter how bad it is, or just when the mood strikes. Some people say, like I said, you should be writing. It doesn't matter how much it is. Every day it's got to be a ritual. Others just say, nope, I don't want to push it because what it leads to is just bad stuff. So where do you fall into that spectrum as far as how often you create?
I think I fall into... I am the writer who believes that you should write every day, but I'm the depressed writer who doesn't, and so I beat myself up all the time. So I believe that that practice is really important, but I would say that my mode is primarily as a writer who writes on inspiration. I definitely will go. The fields will go fallow for 2 or 3 months, and then all of a sudden there's just a rush and a surge. And you know, it has been, things have changed too. You know, like I held off on getting a smartphone for so many years, and then I got one in like 2016, and my reading habits and my writing habits greatly changed with this screen, you know? So that's been something that's taken me away from writing constantly in a journal. So it's a practice that I really believe in, but I don't think I use it enough.
Does it make you anxious then if you don't write? It sounds like it does, right? If you said the feels are fallow, do you feel like I really should be? But then if you're forcing it, does it also hurt you?
I think forcing it isn't a bad thing, but I think you should know when to step away again. You know, I think putting yourself in a place of really having to come up with something is actually a good thing. You might create something that you didn't expect. You know, I did this collaboration years ago with DJ Shadow, and he just kind of he hated my first two attempts, and it was really the first time in ever probably that I had a producer or even like my bandmates be like, "No, that's not good enough. Try again," and then doing it again, and then you know. And then writing something completely different and then being like, "Nah, that's not good enough. Try again." And if I didn't have the respect for him as a producer, then I don't think I would have. But through that process, and I've spoken about this in interviews about this particular thing, he kind of like broke down my ego to a place where I came out of that experience feeling really good about what we had created. I realized that I was an instrument. I wasn't the focus. You know, I was an instrument in someone else's work. That process made me realize that my words aren't so precious, and that to share an idea, you don't have to feel like, "Well, I shared that idea. I can't go into that idea again." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think sometimes you can write a turn of phrase or come to a point and be like, "Okay, well, that's, I've done that." But there's so many ways to look at a story or feeling or moment from different angles. You know, I think the way they say there's always three sides to every story. When I realized that within my own personal life, it made me be able to write three times as many songs.
Yeah.
Instead of just focusing on how I felt, then it's like, well, how did the other person feel and what actually transpired in those moments?
All right. Others, let's see. Should I just pick someone randomly? Garrett, how about you? Are you a create every day person or just when the mood strikes?
I think I fall into a similar category to Sam. I do beat myself up a lot of times because I feel like I should be a little bit more active in songwriting. But I do play music still every day. But I don't write songs every day. So it's kind of like this weird trying to treat it more like, you know, have fun and not as much work. But it's been so long since I've actually written a song that I feel like it's probably time to stop having fun and actually write a song. Which I started this morning. So that's exciting.
Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
But yeah, just it's hard sometimes when you do this for a living and you're, you know, playing these same songs over and over again, and just finished an album and trying to focus on those songs as well. Getting back into the songwriting mood can be a little bit more of a challenge these days.
So let's get into it, because I do love to talk about the ritual. I mean, I have a certain ritual in my process that I think is important. Like, for example, if I write, I'll never write and revise in the same place. Now, I'm a prose writer, not a songwriter. But I'll never, like, if I write in this chair, I'll revise in that chair behind me, or I'll go somewhere else. I think that's important to separate those things. That's the way I am. It doesn't mean everyone is like that. But I do think knowing what works for me, whether it's superstition or not, is important. So do you have, Garrett, do you have that? Is there a ritual to your process, whether it's time of day, room, things you have to have with you, stuff like that?
Usually the ritual starts by consuming too much coffee early in the morning. that's usually how it always starts. And it always happens in this room. I don't really go anywhere else unless we're in the studio. Yeah, drink too much coffee. Sometimes I get up at like 4 or 5 in the morning, a couple hours before my wife and kid get up so I can have some alone time. And yeah, it's nice and quiet, peaceful. And I really enjoy those moments.
Yeah, do you find, we have 4 kids, and I find that having kids has made me much more disciplined because you just don't have, the time is no longer your own.
Right.
So do you find that being a parent has made you a more disciplined creative, a more disciplined artist?
Yes, I think so. But it's also fun. I've been enjoying having my daughter in the room. Boy, right. She'll last about 5 minutes before she has to have her hands on the keys trying to play some sound. But in that 5 minutes, I can usually get something written out.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun to have her.
Yeah. William, how about you? Since it's so early there, are you an early morning person when it comes to creating anyway, or no?
It ebbs and flows. I think I would like to be more of a morning person, but because when I get into the rhythm of being a morning person, I do enjoy it, and I can be productive in the mornings. But I think it's hard. It can be hard to find a routine and a schedule with the kind of constant stop start that we have to have within the band. Like, we just got back a week ago from a 2-week press tour. So I'm always kind of like readjusting to being back home, going away for tour for a couple weeks. And I think for me creating, you know, I do have a studio here at my apartment, that I work at, but what I really enjoy over the years is, I'll go like on a kind of a writing retreat. So I'll go somewhere like, I'll go to the beach, or, recently I went to the desert. Just got a place in the desert for like a week and or like a long weekend, and just bring my portable studio with me. And I just dedicate all the time that I'm there to just focusing on writing. And those periods of those chunks of going away to change the location, it's good for me to get away from distractions like that, just to go away and just have a purely focused time to create. So I just did that recently, I guess in November was the last time I did that. So I try to do it at least, if I can, maybe once a quarter, go away. And then I come back here and I can like fine tune the stuff and expand on the ideas that I come up with. And I just try to write as much as I can in that concentrated time, little fragments of ideas or complete song ideas. And then I take them off down the different paths that they end up. And for me, when I'm creating, it's all about because sometimes it can be so overwhelming, the number of directions you can go. So I feel like, you know, I just find a path and I just follow it and just go down the path wherever it leads. And sometimes it's something that I'm really happy with. Sometimes it's something that we'll never see the light of day.
Yeah.
And just like finding a sound or finding a rhythm that kind of inspires me and sparks that inspiration, sparks that joy. And I try to follow that feeling. If it feels good, you know, see where it leads.
Mike, how about you? Is the ritual of the process important to you at all?
I try to make it important. I'm definitely like a try to do it every day person. And I try to just like make something every day. And for me lately, the thing has been, well, like recently I discovered that I'm so insecure about my own stuff that I make that I sort of can't trust myself about how I like view it. So for me, there's not really ever like good and bad, because like I could be like, this sucks, I totally hate it. And then like a month later, just be like reviewing stuff and be like, oh, that was awesome. Like, why did I, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, it all really depends on like where I am, like in the day with regards to how I'm viewing my own stuff, you know? So I just try to get everything down, like every idea I have, just try to get it down. And lately I've been like bouncing from like thing to thing. So I'll sort of work on something for like a little while. And then when I notice that I like have started like just zoning out on like snare drums or something for like 30 minutes, like a million different snare drum sounds. And I'll be like, all right, I think it's time to, I've hit a wall with this. Like, I think it's time to move on. And some days, like, I'll bounce around like every 10 minutes to something. But I feel like it's become important for me to constantly be reviewing like what I did before and just adding on to little things like where I can. And it seems like I get closer to what looks like a finish line when I do that. For me, I was always like starting things. I'd start like 30 things and like never finish them. Like I just didn't have the discipline, you know? So just sort of working on that practice, like building that practice of just like working on something a little bit like every day. And also trying to find that, I mean, I don't have kids or anything. So just trying to find the balance of like, you know, I play drums. So just trying to find the balance of like staying on top of like my drumming practice takes up a fair amount of time, like every day. And then just everything that goes into that, that has almost like nothing to do with songwriting. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then sort of trying to find there's just not enough hours in the day, you know, to try to like make time for that. Like after this, like some point today, I'm going to have to like walk over to the practice space, I think, and like actually play some real drums, as I haven't like in a week or so, 2 weeks. And, but you know, that's going to cut into my like writing time like later. So I have to kind of like balance it out.
So you said something. I interviewed about a month ago, Mary Timoney, the guitarist, mm-hmm. and she said, described something that reminds me of what you said. And she said she writes in the morning. She always hates what she writes. And then she sets it aside all day. And she said, when I look at it, and she'll look at it at the end of the day, and she says she's a new person at the end of the day because just of what the day has done to her. And if that new person likes it, then she'll continue to write. But 99% of the stuff she writes, she doesn't like. But she said, if that new person likes it, it's like a second, you know, it's like another editor. If that new person likes it, then she thinks, okay, that's pretty good. But she referenced like that new person. That reminds me of a little bit of what you said about coming back to it later on. And, you know, with that new perspective, right?
Yeah, for sure. I really like that. I really like that idea of like a new person, because for me, like coming back to something the next day, and it's just, you know, I think you can just get into like a, you can get into, you can sort of box yourself into a corner, just, you know, you sort of go down some avenues and you kind of can like box yourself in and have in that, and just whatever you do, you can't get out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And so like being able to come back the next day, just with like a totally clean slate, totally new perspective, I find that to be really, I agree with her. I find that to be a way that helps get me to, you know, actually like completing something.
Yeah. All right, Sam. So I am big on, I love the idea. I think a lot of ideas come to me, at least when I am not thinking about getting new ideas. And Agatha Christie has this line where she says, the best time to write a book is when you're doing the dishes. And I see that to mean that the best ideas come to us. And a lot of songwriters tell me they get their best ideas come when they are doing monotonous activities like folding clothes, vacuuming. When you're not thinking about ideas is when they come to you, because it's something about, and I've heard gardening, you know, a lot of things that, because when you're doing something that requires no conscious thought, that's when the unconscious kind of bubbles up. And I know that's the case with me. And gosh, for better or for worse, Scott Adams, the guy that the Dill, he doesn't have the best, you know, horrible things a couple of years ago, to be clear. But like 10 years ago, he had this article in the Wall Street Journal where he says, boredom is the best place for creativity. So anyway, I guess that's a preface to saying, do you get song ideas during those times of monotony, with anything that you're doing? Kind of monotonous activity. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably for me, I would say it's driving.
Yeah.
And part of that is, you know, yeah, cause you're just like your automatic brain's on, and then you can kind of, you're locked into this one thing, but you know, your creative mind can kind of travel. And travel is such a huge part of our work.
Yeah.
Our lives, but also like in our songs, like what I've written so many songs about travel, because part of being in a band is being far away from people you love and your families and things like that. But I actually once wrote a song, and going back to kind of what you guys were saying, about coming back to ideas, the guys have sent me many ideas over the years. And as I said, I'm not really, I need the inspiration to write. And sometimes I'll get a song from the guys. It's an amazing track, but I don't know what to do with it at that moment. And it can sit for years, and then 4 or 5 years later, I'll find it. And then I'll have the feeling. But I was driving down the road years ago and wrote the song Through the Roses from our fifth album, while driving down the road to Asheville to see my brother. It's about a 7.5-hour drive from Baltimore. I pulled my laptop out, opened it up, and pulled up, GarageBand and pushed record and played. I basically sang a demo over the car stereo into the it was very dangerous. You shouldn't do this. Do not try this. But it was in that moment where I just found this old song a few days ago. And then it just hit me driving down the road. But the thing is, for me, I live with the songs always, like the guys send me tracks and they're just constantly going through my head. I'm constantly thinking, but then it takes me to sit down and actually put it to paper and decide, make the decisions. But these days when I get a song, I only listen to 30 seconds. And if I'm not prepared to write in that moment, I turn it off and I will walk away from it. And I just let it, even that 30 seconds will play in my head, because I know that if I listen to a song 50 or 60 or 70 times trying to write it and I don't hit it, then I'll get discouraged and I won't ever write it. So that's kind of another weird thing. But yeah, it's all the stuff in the day. Like I feel like I'm constantly writing, even though I'm not like putting something in paper, or putting something in a note on my phone. Like if you're a writer, if you're a thinker, if you're a creator, you're constantly, it's part of the disease of it. You're constantly in the mode, which can be negative too, because you should be present in your life.
Well, I think it relieves some of the anxiety, because I know when I was a professor, I would tell my students, your writing process is taking place while you are thinking, eating, sleeping, walking, talking. Like it's, if we only think of the writing process as taking place when pen hits paper, you're never going to get anything done. But it's like you said, I think if as writers, we think of the writing process as always happening, I think that relieves a little bit of the anxiety.
Maybe it's I'm giving myself a free pass. I'm always ready.
Exactly. Right. I know. Right. 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 So I do want to follow up one thing, because you did said, I think you mentioned paper. So are you, when it comes to lyrics, are you a pen and paper person or a computer person?
I've become more of a computer person in the last few years, but that's more because, I do hip hop stuff as well. Usually when I'm writing verse, like rap verse, or poetry, long form poetry, like it's on the computer. I can't really do it on my phone. It's too small and cagey. But if you look at my old notebooks writing rap verses, it's like boxes over things, and like arrows pointing like this needs to go there. And so it's helped my my editing process. I've gotten much more into finalizing lyrics. I used to leave things pretty open until the last moment, until it was like time to record. But you know, in like a document on my computer, you know, I never take away what I've written. I'm still like build from here, and then I copy paste, and then I rebuild, and then I copy paste. So I can see my work. I can see my work, and I don't like cut the ideas out, because that's something I read or that I heard when I was pretty young, which is like never erase anything. Don't because I used to just like scratch things out and like try to hide them. And you know, that's like a important thing too, which is like, don't be afraid of what you have to say. If you're afraid of what you have to say, that you don't want to see it or you don't want someone else to see it, then, you know, I think you need to work on that in your life, you know, and figure out why you don't feel comfortable with that. So I try to be really open with myself and in my writing and keep all those ideas. Because you don't know what you'll come back to. Like I'll go through, you know, my recent journals and yeah, there's like ideas where you say, I can't believe I felt that way, right? Or why did I forget this? You know, this is a really important moment. Why am I not living by this idea?
Yeah.
But I love writing on paper, like a good pen is everything, you know, and it draws something out of you. And that's probably something that that maybe only writers or artists understand, which is like the way that pen, or maybe like lawyers with their fountain. My dad always had a really nice fountain pen, and that was like the only thing he would write with. It was just special to him.
I had Jerry Harrison of Talking Heads in the podcast, and he said it's got to be a felt tip pen because he enjoys the sensation of the scraping on the paper.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I thought that was so cool. Like, I love that he said, because he actually is a visual artist. So he's trained in that medium, but he felt it's got to be felt tip because he just loves that sensation. And I just think that. What's that?
I'm a Pilot Precise guy. So,
I mean, I say this all the time. I could do an entire website dedicated to color of ink and brand of pens.
Yeah.
That people, it's that, but that's part of the ritual, right? Some people say it's got to be black. It's got to be blue. It's got to be, like you said, whatever brand, Pilot Precise. But I don't know. I guess the flip side to that is that if you make it too precious, you know, some people tell me they will intentionally make things not precious by writing on the backs of utility bills, envelopes, because if you write in a fancy journal, there's too much weight and then too much pressure.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's terrifying. Like, you've probably lost a notebook before, right? It's like the worst thing in the world. It's the worst thing. And all of my notebooks are, I usually retire them when they're about 70% filled, you know, because I'm just like this. I can't, there's only a few that I've gotten all the way through. I'm like, I can't risk losing this, which does put like a preciousness to it. But I like the document, you know, and I like that it's there. But when I go through my things, I do find, you know, there is scribblings on all kinds of different, even, you know, when you have a pack of cigarettes, the papers have a little cardboard backing, and I've got scraps where it's just tiny etchings, you know, so kind of whatever you have. But, you know, one of our big fans got me a pen a few years ago, because I said in an interview, and I've said many times, like, I'm the writer who never has a pen, and they got me a pen with that engraving on it.
Which
I like hold dearly, because you know, that's the worst thing when you have an idea and you don't have any way to write it down.
Yeah.
Like, how do I call myself a writer? And I'm always losing my pen. I don't have the one thing that could make me a writer.
That's true. Garrett, how about you? Do you get back to my original question was, do you get, you know, ideas during monotonous activities?
Yes. But a little bit different. I tend to write music sometimes in like loop fashion. So I'll have like an idea that's just looping, and I will get that loop melody in my head, and I will then sort of play that over and over and over again until I can hear something else happening. And sometimes it happens to where, like, I guess, like, as a parent, there are many chores. So I'm constantly, you know, doing chores and thinking about this loop, hearing these melodies, and I'll come back and kind of lay them over the top of this loop. But the problem starts to occur when the melody, it's too busy because I keep thinking of new things. So then I have to like go through and pick out which is working the best or not, and then wait till I share it with the guys to see if it's just too insane. But yeah, constantly in monotony running through my head are these melodies and ideas that I try to jot down via keyboard.
So when you say household chores, like household chores, when you say chores, it's the household chores.
Yeah.
I know, like Agatha Christie said, doing the dishes. It's crazy. I mean, someone told me folding clothes once. That was a great time for them to be productive.
That's usually the one thing that I'm constantly doing is folding clothes here on this couch, listening to this loop playing back.
Yeah.
How many pairs of underwear can my daughter like actually have?
I know. That's all you do is laundry. I know that feeling. William, how about you? Do you get ideas in those times of monotony, whatever it is that you're doing?
Yeah, totally. I definitely agree with that. You know, so I remember noticing that early on in my life. You know, my first job was at a hardware store. And then later on in high school, I worked at an art supply store, and just like sitting there, like stocking the screws and the nails and the paint. And doing a monotonous action, just so many ideas would come to me. And I think, like you said, just not like that, having that space from the actual pen to paper, is really important. As you say, it's like the work is always being done. And, you know, I meditate, regularly, and sometimes I'll get ideas when I'm meditating, but, oftentimes it'll just like the idea, I'll have an idea come to me, and then it kind of, when I come out of the meditation, it's somewhere in my subconscious. It's not right up on the conscious level. But yeah, I think that space is really important. I love boredom.
Yeah, it's right. It is. Well, I think it's, there was a great article in the Washington Post where they talked about why we get our best ideas in the shower. And oh, yeah. It's that, it's not the singing, it's why we get those best ideas, because it involves unconscious activity. And for sure. I think that's the theme of it, is that's why those ideas come. Mike, how about you? Some songwriters have told me they get great ideas when they're out about, not just monotonous activities, but also rhythms. Gosh, the guy from Stu McKenzie from King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, he told me that car alarms, he's gotten song ideas hearing beats from car alarms. And
I get that.
Do you really?
For me, it's always turn signals. Like if the turn signal is on and I start like playing something to it, and then I'll start playing stuff like against it, you know, and then that can like lead to something.
Do you ever get to where you're going?
I'm constantly hearing that. Well, we have this light right where you turn onto our street. That's like a left turn, red left turn arrow that is just kind of long. So I often just find myself sitting there with the turn signal on, like waiting for it to change. So I'm just like, I'm always like doing stuff against it or playing along to it. And then we have this light rail that comes through town, like through like right by where I live. And the bell of the light rail always, is it like a specific tempo that's just like really groovy, you know? So like when I hear it, I immediately start like singing beats over it, you know, trying to like make it fit. I think I've even like sampled it a couple of times. We also, there's lots of trains around like Baltimore. So like, even like on our record, there was like a, there's like a recording, there's like a train like going by like right outside the studio, and I recorded that, you know what I mean? So like there's just always like buses, trains. I'm a big like get sounds from out in the wild. I live right by the park. A lot of times I'm walking by the park. Lately there's been just an insane amount of crows, and they're so loud that like just like you'll sort of zone in on one and sort of the rhythmic, you know, cadence of whatever it's doing, and then trying to hear if it's like being replied to or like mimicked or like something like that, you know, and you can really kind of go down a rabbit hole with that stuff. But I don't really like, for me, the monotony, I get, for me, it's always like early in the morning, like I have to be like lucid, like just coming out of like a sleep that like, that I get ideas the whole rest of the day. If I'm doing something, I'm either like focused on what I'm doing, thinking about what I have to do next, that like, I just don't really, ideas just sort of don't come to me. I have to be sort of sitting there and just like messing around, and then like go back and be like, okay, did anything come out of that? You know?
So is it, from a practical perspective though, is it maddening? I mean, when you're going out in the, and you're in a new place, are you actively listening for things, or do those things just passively? Cause I could see that being you know, kind of a maddening thing. If all those sounds are around you, wherever you're going, or you, is it good? Cause you're going out and thinking, oh, I'm going to listen for those things. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm sort of actively, passively listening, like if that makes sense. Like, yeah. I don't set out with the intention to just sort of take everything in, but for whatever reason, like if something loops, like if there's a rhythm out there that just sort of loops, like I'll like latch onto it. Yeah. Or like, you know, just because I'm really practiced at like listening for that. You know what I mean? So like, I'm not setting out with a mission to like take in and hear everything that's going on around me, but just trying to be sort of, but I definitely will notice it. Like if it like pops out.
Yeah. All right. Last question. I have about 5 more minutes, so we'll make this kind of rapid fire, but I do find that songwriters are voracious readers or consumers of other types of art. I mean, typically writing, you know, Ernest Hemingway famously said he thinks all writers should go to art galleries to get inspired. Like, I thought that was interesting. He didn't say they should read. He said they should go to art galleries. So Sam, we'll start with you. You know, let me do like a minute each. Favorite writers, favorite genres you gravitate towards?
Definitely like magic surrealism. I think the most important, and you know, poets, of course, like Theodore Retka is really influential in our work, in my personal work and my personal writing. And then novelists, definitely like Marquez, you know, Love in the Time of Cholera, and Knut Hampson, who also you cannot speak about, but he was a great writer. bad dude. Great writer. Also really important, like kind of Scandinavian surrealism. I guess it's not even surrealism. Like it's something about Growth of the Soil is a crazy book. And then like Calvino, Italo Calvino, of course, is another one who I really love. Yeah, recently I've been reading Jennifer Egan, which is from my brother.
Yeah, I just finished Candy House. The new Jennifer.
Yeah. I just started Candy House, but my brother had gave me Goons, like Goon Squad, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And I finally read it, and I read it in like 3 days. And I'm like, and I don't really read. I'm not a fast reader. I couldn't put it down. So I'm on that kick now. Yeah. So good.
I finished reading. I read Candy House and put it down. And I thought, how do you even begin to write a book like that? It's so good. Amazing.
Yeah. I recently am reading this book called Indigenous Continent, which is very different than, you know, it's like historical about the conquest of America from the Native perspective. And it's brilliant, but very different than what I normally read. Like, I'm not really a history person.
Yeah.
But I am very interested in like Native American study.
Yeah. Garrett, how about you?
Don't have too much time to read lately, but
children's does, books.
Children, so many children's books. It's unbelievable.
Strega Nona.
Yeah. You know, Ladybug. Ladybug goes down a lot, front to back. But I did actually, we were just in England and I was told about this group of super fans of soccer called Ultras. So I just got this crazy book about Ultras. Do you know about this? I just so kind of reading about it.
I love this. Yeah, I love that Garrett's into this.
This wild world of Ultras, and I'd never heard anything about it. And now I'm just reading this book about Ultras from around the world, and it's new. It's very new to me.
All right, William, how about you?
I like nonfiction, so I'm big. I like reading like other artists or creatives, like their work. Like currently, I'm reading Acid for the Children by Flea. Like a couple years ago, I read Room to Dream by David Lynch, and I studied painting in college, and I hadn't painted in a long time, and that book totally inspired me and got me to start painting again. And I've been painting it so much more ever since that book. And I've also recently read like Werner Herzog's Every Man for Himself and God Against All. And you know, I read Cured by Lowell Tolhurst and Rick Rubin's The Creative Act. All these are like the ones I've been reading this past year. So it just hearing how other people you know, what they have to say about the creative process in general and how they go about doing things, like other musicians, other artists, how they work, is really interesting, which is why this podcast is so awesome. And thanks for having us on here.
Mike, you're the last one.
Yeah, I kind of run the gamut. Right now I'm reading a collection of Black horror and science fiction short stories edited by Jordan Peele that I got for Christmas. That's really good. I just read Bright Young Women by Jessica Knoll. That's sort of about, well, it is about Ted Bundy, like the women in the sorority that he attacked, but told from their point of view without ever mentioning Ted Bundy's name.
Wow.
They just call him the defendant or like whatever. David Gran, I've been a big fan of. Like a couple of years ago, I read Killers of the Flower Moon, and I just read The Wager like a couple months ago.
Amazing writer.
I'm a huge Agatha Christie fan, actually. Big Agatha Christie fan, and then also like kind of a trashy like mysteries, you know, like airport like mysteries, because they definitely like scratch and itch. And I have another friend of mine who's a writer named Barbara Borland, who actually just wrote a book called The Force of Such Beauty. It's really good. And she's always like, she kind of has that same itch. So she's always like passing stuff on to me and being like, this is pretty fun, you know? And like, we'll go in there and like start trying to, most everyone is like an Agatha Christie knockoff, you know? So we're sort of trying to be like, oh, they took like, and then there were none and mixed it with like Roger Ackroyd or like, you know, but we're not successful at it. I also really dug Philip Glass's autobiography. Just listened to that. He grew up in the same neighborhood that I live in now. So it's kind of wild. Like his house, like where he grew up is like two streets over from me. Oh, wow. And I just read Faith, Hope, and Carnage by Nick Cave, which is amazing, which is a series of conversations that are sort of centered around the death of his son and his creative process with this writer, Sean Hagen. And I just started reading I just started. I just finished Naomi Klein's new book, Doppelganger, which is like really depressing. Yeah. I listened to that one, but it's like really sort of dark and not great.
Listen, I've been doing this for 13, 14 years. You are the most literate band, the most well-read band. No one even touches this band. I say that in all honesty. That's an amazing list. I was not. I should just end the podcast now because no one will ever touch that. I've never heard that long of a list of books. That's amazing.
And that's it for today's episode. Check back in a couple of weeks for a new episode. I do try to post these every 2 weeks. Sometimes with more frequency, sometimes with less. A lot of that depends on my work commitments, my family commitments, and also when artists can talk to me. It's not easy to get these interviews. Speaking of interviews, did you know this is a relatively new podcast? I only started podcasting about a year ago. Depending on when you're listening to this, I should say 2022. But from 2010 to 2022, all of my interviews were transcribed and they are all there archived for you to go down that deep rabbit hole. So if you go to songwritersonpodcast.com and click on From the Archives at the top, you'll see all of those transcribed interviews. I think there's over 200. So go down that rabbit hole. There's a lot of great interviews there. But you'll find all of those there. Again, the podcast itself is relatively recent. So there's a lot of reading you need to be catching up on with those old interviews. Speaking of interviews, if you have suggestions for interview subjects or want to comment or complain, anything like that, email me at ben@songwritersonprocess.com. That's ben@songwritersonprocess.com. And that's it for today's episode. This wraps it up. Thank you very much for listening and have a good one.